Welcome to the Isaka Podcast. On today's Offstage and Off-Script series podcast, we're joined by George Khalil, Chief Innovation Officer and former CISO with the City of Riverside, California. We're recording today's program from Isaka's North America CACS Conference in Anaheim, California, where George presented earlier today on securing unstructured data. Thank you for being with us today, George.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
All right, well, first off, what made you want to present on this topic?
The topic is near and dear to my heart. When I joined the City of Riverside as a new CISO, building a new program from the grounds up, I wanted to understand what our risk was, how should we frame our protections and controls, and what exactly are we trying to protect, and what risk exists. And in addition to looking at the general security controls that are applicable to all organizations, I wanted to know what the liability that existed. And we started by doing a data discovery and data classification pilot that we thought was going to be a simple, strategic, surgical initiative that we'll take on, and within a couple of weeks we'll have an understanding of our data exposure and how broad is the data that we have in our environments. And quickly enough, we start realizing that this is, you know, we hit a landmine to some extent, and we found that data was prevalent everywhere. And then we start seeing that this isn't just unique to us, it's actually across the whole industry. The initial pilot started as a pilot, and it became a two and a half year old project that spun off multiple speaking engagements that we end up winning an award over our approach and methodology of trying to minimize the footprint, minimize the liability associated with data exposure.
And how has this challenge evolved in recent years as more and more data is being created, the proliferation of devices? I'd have to imagine that it's a challenge that's really ramped up for people like yourself.
It absolutely has, and the proliferation of the cloud is making it harder, because data is existing within your own organization and outside your organization. During the presentation earlier, I mentioned it to the audience that if someone changed, you know, file permissions on an internal network share to everyone, everyone has one context when it's within your own internal data center and internal infrastructure versus an everyone on an internet-facing cloud platform that means the whole world. So the exposure now has been amplified by many, many magnitudes and many folds due to the introduction of cloud storage and the proliferation within our environments.
In your session, you explained that data is money, but organizations don't always act like that's the case. Can you elaborate a little bit on that point?
Absolutely. If we look at the driving momentum, you know, for the Googles and Facebooks and all these social media platforms, their business model is around data. But when we look at the opposite end of the spectrum for the commercial and enterprise and government sector that we have, we look at regulatory fines and regulatory authorities. If you look at several standards and several articles that try to monetize the cost of damage per lost record, and it ranges anywhere from $130 all the way to $300 and some for health records. So, you know, dealing from social security numbers to credit cards to health, complete health records, and the fines associated with each one of those varies across the industry, and it changes over time as well. But it could be as low as $100, as high as $300 and some. And to try and quantify that within, to really change the mindset and change behavior, I've done my best to explain to our employees, our partners, and even the community that we need to look at the records that employees are working with as monetary value. If we use an example of a file that contains 30-some thousand employee records, is a human resources personnel that's working remotely taking a file that has everybody in the entire organization, all their PII, are they being productive or are they increasing liability? And do we have the proper controls to protect that? If we try and quantify that and give an example, the example that I gave to everyone during the presentation and even within our own organization, if someone asks if they should take, you know, $11 or $12 million home to work on them remotely, you know, they would get laughed out of the office. But when someone says, I'm going to be working remotely on all of our payroll records and I'm taking it with me, no one thinks about it twice. But if you look at the regulatory impact and potential fines associated with loss of that data, it would be in the millions of dollars. And for us to really drive change in behavior and to start getting our employees educated about the impact of the and the value of the data they're working with, we have to educate them that this is as good as money, the data they're working with, and they should apply the same protections and controls that they do when they're doing cash handling.
What would you say is the best starting point for an organization that is looking to improve its approach to securing unstructured data?
I think the approach that we've taken was unique because we did not try to take on the world. We established the rules that the Department of Innovation and Technology and Information Security was not the data owners. We can help the organization identify where the data lives. We can help the organization protect the data, but we're not the ones that authored the data, and we don't know what value it has internally to the organization. We know what regulations apply to it. We know what the ramifications of losing that data, but we don't know how it's internally used. And we ended up partnering up with all of our business units, all of our departments, and we had them all represented in a task force, in a committee, that they had to find how that data was being generated, why it was being generated, how it's being used, and be a part of the solution rather be a part of the problem.
Why is it so important to consider the full life cycle of the data when making these calculations?
Through our own exercise, and I'm sure that applies to a lot of agencies as well and a lot of different companies, employees don't really have a context. They think that, you know, they're running a payroll report or some other customer report or lead report or financial reconciliation reports. And they think that this is a normal part of their operation that they do weekly, biweekly, monthly, quarterly, and they archive them. And looking at the importance of building that data hygiene and the data lifecycle, is that report needed, or is that one-time event that needs to get destroyed after? What applicable records retention apply to that information? Are we applying the appropriate records retention? We think of records to documents, litigation cases, whatever other things that we have our hands on, but we tend not to do that with unstructured data. We may consider it within an enterprise application that has built-in retention capabilities, but we tend to forget unstructured data of how it's stored, how it's being cleaned up, how it's being retained and destroyed when it's no longer needed.
You mentioned that the end goal should be to protect the data, but that organizations often lose focus on what they need to protect. Why do you think that is, and what can help kind of reinforce that sense of clarity that should be in place?
It's a great question. We tend to focus on deploying technology, and at the end of the day, employees need to access data to work. So we tend to implement a lot of tools, a lot of hardware, a lot of software, but at the end of the day, employees are accessing the data every day. And as long as the employee is not engaged and not partnering with information security and doesn't understand what the ramifications are, it's going to be a losing battle. If you look at the vast majority of data breaches, I would say 60%+ are most likely related to accidental release. If you look at municipalities, there's been voter records that were released without authorization through accidental disclosure. You look at change permissions on AWS buckets. You look at various pieces. It's human error that results in the data being exposed to personnel that shouldn't have access to it. So I believe getting the employees and getting the human element engaged to be a part of the problem, part of the solution rather than the part of the problem. If they know the value, they know the impact, and then they're able to contribute. Because at the end of the day, your people will have access to your systems to be able to function. And if it's led by a person making a mistake will end up exposing the data. Trying to put automated discovery, automated classification, like data loss prevention system, data loss prevention tools to discover things if they are accidentally moved. But at the same time, you need to get your users to help you to become a part of that remediation effort in addition to deploying technology.
You mentioned voting records a couple minutes ago. In the context of your role with the city of Riverside, can you speak a little bit from a public sector standpoint, some of the distinct challenges that exist in those kinds of roles?
So we don't have, as a city, we don't have our own voters record. That's primarily through the county, but across the state of California right now, the state is revoking a lot of the certification on voting systems because they're running on legacy end-of-life equipment. So our county, along with many other counties right now, are in a rush to try and replace all their voting systems before the upcoming election. But that doesn't directly impact the city because the voting goes through the county itself.
And going back to the session today here at North America CAX, what stood out about any of the questions or feedback that was top of mind for attendees today?
I think one of the last questions that we received was one that resonated, and it was revolving around being able to revoke access to data remotely. That is one item I mentioned, and there was a lot of questions revolving around how can I do that, and what about when I send the data to a partner or to a vendor or to an external party, what can I do once the data leaves my perimeter to be able to make sure that the data is inaccessible? And that's critical in this day and age because our borders and perimeters are dissolving to a large extent. And we need to be able to recall the data, for the lack of other words, after it's already been sent outside of your own control. So I thought that was an excellent question, and it was followed up by about two or three other follow-up questions.
And then just to wrap up, in addition to some of the considerations we've discussed regarding unstructured data, in your role as Chief Innovation Officer, what are some other areas from a technology standpoint that are kind of been top of mind for you lately, or some other ways that you've been looking to kind of leverage some of the new possibilities that technology empowers for the good of your city?
We're looking at converging different controls to help us protect our data. So, for example, HTTPS inspection, to be able to look within encrypted payloads and see, does it contain any sensitive data? Doesn't contain, to be able to marry data loss prevention, data classification, along with perimeter controls to try and create automated discovery and marking and classification, to try and work with our business to try and mark and create the right watermarks and the right metadata associated with the data they create there. Those are all things we're working on to be able to create enforcement points where the data, if the data is moved, then it can be stopped. But a lot of infrastructure has to be in place to support the type of framework.
All right. Well, George, we very much appreciate you sharing your insights with the ISACA podcast audience today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for our program today. For more on ISACA's North America CACS Conference, visit www.isaca.org/NACACS.